Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting your mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, it's summertime. I know you've been out on your bike. How's your week gone so far?
My week's great. Yes, looking forward to getting out on the bike hopefully this weekend. And without giving too much away, I'm excited because it's not every day that we get a chance to record with someone on their birthday.
Yes.
So that's all I'll say about that.
This is our first birthday podcast. And I think if Ivan, our editor, is listening, he could maybe pipe in some birthday music here. That would be apropos. So we'll leave that up to him.
Or we could sing, one or the other. Well, no, maybe the music. The music might be better.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, today on the pod, we have Kara Wilson Oliver, VP People at Rose Rocket. Kara, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, happy birthday to start off. Hope you have a wonderful birthday. Hope it's a wonderful year for you. But before we begin, I do have to give a big shout out to a mutual friend of ours, Amanda Small, for such a great introduction because our first call went so well that we ended up booking the podcast. And we've created such a good friendship with Amanda, so very fortunate to meet you as well. And I thought a great starting point for our conversation today is you and I have chatted about you spent 25 years in Toronto startups in the tech industry. And I know you've read this book, The Hard Things About Hard Things, Ben Horowitz, of course. Fantastic read. What's your current hard thing about hard things?
Oh, we're starting with an easy one, are we?
Of course.
Just going right for the jugular.
Jump right into it.
First of all, thank you very much for the warm welcome and hi to Amanda, who I enjoyed lunch with this week. And we responsibly split a margarita drink at lunch. So very, very good. Very good week for me. And thank you for the birthday wishes. The hard thing, right? It's been a path to get me to this point in my life, right? You know, I've done a career change. Like you said, I've been in pretty quiet startups in the Toronto tech scene for quite a while. Have been in six or seven startups at this point. Some have been really scrappy. Some have been acquired. Some would be deemed successful. Some would be deemed not. And right now I'm currently enjoying sort of the tail end of like a resurrection or a career change, moving from the product side in a tech startup, and I kind of switched sides of the floor. So now I'm on the people side. And so I went and did school. I had to really recreate myself into a function that I knew very little about, but mostly got hired after the fact based on my gray hair and I guess my personality. Did the hard work. But, you know, I'm kind of at the crest of like curiosity. I feel like I've got enough of sort of functional competency. But the hard thing about hard thing for me next is like, where to next? What are the conversations? How do I need to push myself for this next wave? Because I feel like I'm just getting started, even though I'm very, very much a Gen Xer. So that's the hard thing is just like, I feel like there's this pulse and this movement that I've got to move on to and sort of accomplishes the next thing. And I haven't pinned it down yet. So it feels pretty hard right now.
Is that where you started on the product side?
Yeah, kind of, pretty much. It's a bit of a blend product. Used to be like project management or just like really bossy account managers would be the best way I would describe it. And I was probably 2 to 3 years into the function and it didn't really have a name. And someone came to visit us from Facebook. So way back in the day, and he drew out two things for me. He drew out agile because that was like an unknown thing. And then he also described this like function called product. And he's like, that's what you are. You're a product manager. I'm like, Oh, okay. I didn't know it had a name. So yeah, I started in product, even though it didn't have the name, and then was there for quite a while. Product can look so different in every startup. I tend to be a little bit more on the operational client sort of woo side than the straight hardcore tech. But yeah, I spent 15, 17 years in various product orgs.
Well, it reminds me of my conversation with Amanda Small, because Amanda comes from non-traditional. Her background is non-traditional for that space that she's in, is I think their latest role, VP people or something equivalent. How did you end up there if you're coming from product? Because those are different worlds, right? And maybe different, I don't know if it's different skill sets or personalities, but traditionally you see different people in each of those silos. So how did you end up where you are now?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's a few things. I always sort of describe it as a false start that really made me want it. So as I was exiting out of one company that had been for 12 years, we'd been successful. We'd been acquired. We actually been acquired multiple times and then went on to acquire their companies. And I was introduced to a wonderful COO who could see the transferable skills, right? We had talked about, like, you know, I wanted to leave product and come into something a bit genericized, but talking about possibly going into the people or HR space. Had a wonderful 6 weeks as we built out the first iteration of sort of stabilizing projects in the company. And then he left the company and they needed someone to run product. And so I had this false start where I had started a thing. And I always joke, like, at 9 a.m. on a Monday, I was the head of people. At 5 p.m. on the same Monday, I was the head of product. And it was like a total whiplash of a day. I always sort of described it as an all-time low of a company. It's actually where I met Amanda. It was indoor mapping. And if you ever saw me navigate anything, you should not be in mapping. Unless the target audience is middle-aged woman who can't use a map, which it most certainly was not, it wasn't the right fit. So it felt like just misplaced the whole time I was there. But because I had this moment temporarily, but this moment of success, I had an idea of what I wanted to do after. And I was also spending quite a bit of time exploring just building communities and building relationships outside of work. So one of the things I love to talk about is I started running goals groups. My inaugural goals group started about 13 years ago. And so much of that has led in to like building that community, but also helping me navigate this change and having the courage to say, okay, I'm going to stop working now. I'm going to go to school. So I kind of went to HR school, as I like to say, and then came out and worked my butt off, like full stop. Like no one studied more multiple choice. It was like a bit ridiculous, but it was like a feverish hunger that I had to learn this thing. I had to figure out how to be successful in tech. And I saw tons of transferable skills between how I could build a product team and think about customers to how I could service a people team. And so I was able to successfully come out, bit of a bumpy start, but have been successful in getting sort of executive roles in startups. And I'm off and running again. So like I said, I'm kind of 4 years into it now and kind of have my toes over the next thing, looking down and being like, it's a bit unknown to me. And that's a hard thing. So the transition was pretty natural for me. It was kind of like an intention that got taken away. And then I got really intentional, went to school, and then have been able to talk my way into a few jobs since.
Kara, I've got a question that I'm going to ask you. This isn't it. Before I get to that, I'm getting the sense that you have a pretty good sense of humor and that you don't take yourself too seriously. Would that be fair?
It's true. Although I will say, sometimes, you know, like you've heard, what tickles me might bruise others, right? There's a great saying around that. And so I sometimes have to be conscious of this because I am a huge fan of foibles in life, like just silliness and things happening. And my default reaction for my Irish and British parents is to giggle. And, you know, sometimes when you're delivering really tough news, like I like to have this moment of brevity around like, holy shit, can you believe we have to talk about this, or, you know, type thing. And so I do have to watch myself, but 100% my people are the people who laugh through life. I think it's so, so important to have fun and to just like live in the joy.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad I asked that and I'm glad you shared that. That wasn't my question. I'm going to back up a little bit. You said, you know, you've been involved in a number of startups over the years and that seems to be your thing. Can you talk a little bit about that? Just because why the attraction to startups? That's got to be a tough gig in the sense that, like you said, you know, some are going to fail, right? You're joining onto this startup and you know that maybe a year from now, you're going to be looking for a new job because it's going to fail. So tell me a little bit about maybe, you know, whether the challenge, the attraction around being in that space.
So listen, I stumbled into it again. I didn't really have a name. It was just like a small company that did some tech right back in the day. But the truth is there's a different kind of addiction. I am a builder at core. I like to take nothing and turn it into something. I like to do that very collaboratively. You can see it in all of the stuff that I do. I love to build things. And that really is the best place to do it. I think the birthplace of innovation is in startups. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Like, I listen sometimes to different people's stories or different, like, how their work is going. I'm like, listen, I tore down and rebuilt an empire in a single day. Like, that's what has to happen daily. And I sleep well at night. I enjoy life. So I know I can handle this pace, but it is a marathon. It is an athletic event that you go through near daily. Even my morning. I just had a morning this morning, had the afternoon off, and I can't even describe the amount of like progress and anti-progress that we also made in a single day. And I don't know how to do it any other way. It's just like build fast, get the unit economics right, and, you know, find the joy in it. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I say that as being the consummate oldest woman typically in these startups. I know there's a little bit of a like, you know, I'm the edge of that. I'm the first one through, but I can't imagine life being any other way.
So let's explore that a little bit more then. You said you love fixing things, problem solving, building things. Can you talk about maybe a success that you've had along the way that you want to share with us?
Yeah, I mean, the easy stuff is like the companies that have been acquired. Again, I'm typically in social enterprise. They're pretty quiet. I don't have like a big online presence or anything, but I'd love to talk about one that is really near dear to my heart. So I worked with a CEO over two ventures. Again, social enterprise. The first one was Scrappy, civic participation. There was like four of us, right? We needed to package that up and put that away. But, you know, he also had an organization called Digital Public Square. So shout out to Farhan, who was the CEO at the time. And it was a really interesting moment. I was exiting out of school, out of HR school, and it was the pandemic, right? And they were masters at mis and disinformation. So they could look around the world, and it was specifically for, you know, human rights, empathy building in other countries. And they became a real useful resource during the pandemic because mis and disinformation was rampant. Everyone knew what it was, right? Everyone learned that term, became rampant in terms of, you know, knowledge around COVID, knowledge around vaccines. And so we had to, in the pandemic, become experts in COVID, the disease itself, in vaccines. We had to have panelists of epidemiologists and real-time deploy using gamification. We had to deploy out ways that we could teach people about what was really true and not true. And we were deployed in both Canada and also the US. And we were in the US during the Trump Biden election, right? So you can think, even from a people perspective, I needed to find a bunch of people who could work in the pandemic about the pandemic live, who cared about global affairs, cared about the way that the world was thinking about this, cared about each other, cared about masking, cared about vaccines, cared about all these types of things, but were able to successfully take people who were, let's say, totally against vaccines and move their dial a bit. Or take someone who didn't believe that COVID was really happening in the world and help move them, because there's something about gamification. So just to explain that a little bit more, it was a game that was like a true false. It was really silly. It was like a thumbs up, colorful true false. But what you did was you would be asked private questions in that moment and say like, hey, do you think this is true? Do you think hydroxychloroquine is a cure for COVID? You know, sort of a yes, no. And there's something that happens when someone's presented with a fact privately on their phone that's in a delightful package that allows their brain to answer that with truthful and also allows them, if, for example, they got something false, to learn a little bit more about that. Because you're not talking to somebody and you're not their data versus your data. You don't have to have a confrontation. It's a private moment in a delightful package. And so that was something I just absolutely like loved. It's not a typical HR thing. We were just like in the middle of the pandemic, trying to do our level best with what we had and the skills that we had. And so it is one of my absolute favorite moments, is how we could rally together over that year to help deploy this very, you know, no one would even remember it, but deploy this thing out into the Canadian and into the American markets to help with the cause.
That is pretty neat to hear about that. Yeah, that sounds like it would have been really, and I can't imagine there were, well, maybe I'm wrong. I can't imagine though that there were a lot of other people doing that. That'd be true.
That's exactly right. You know, Digital Public Square happened to be experts in something that became very, very topical, and it's a nonprofit. So there were a lot of grant money that came very, very quickly for us to sort of deploy and get this stuff into market. But you can imagine it's like you're watching social dashboards around the world and they're like, oh, look, hydroxychloroquine has been mentioned by Trump. Like, what the heck's that, right? So you have to rapidly go out and figure out like what's real, what's not real, and then deploy it into the market. And again, you're doing that on a person-to-person way, in a very safe way, with as much truth as we can put out in that moment. So it's a lot of discretionary decisions. And at the end of the day, you're just trying to help the cause as you go through with giving people truthful information in a very, very confusing time.
Cara, I want to go back to an earlier point that you made, because I feel it's why I feel very aligned with you and our mutual friend, Amanda Small, as well, in that you want to see joy in life. It's okay to have that giggle and you've got to watch it. And I do too. But it's one of the things that I've always said, if you're going to work for a living, let's enjoy it. You spend a lot of your time at work. And Al and I just had a giggle. I don't know if he'll admit that, but we just had a giggle before we started. But sometimes we do have to watch it, because when my business partner, or my other business partner, Joe, and I get together, we get into the giggles and we're acting silly. And of course, our CEO, Al, you know, has to bring us back to, oh, yes, we are running a business, by the way.
Yeah.
That's focused.
And that's why I feel that alignment with you. So I wanted to point that out.
Thank you. Yeah. I default to a giggle. I'm like, oh my God. Okay. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we get along. And you just talked about something successful that you went through during a very tough time, obviously. In your, and it can be on the product side, it can be on the BP people side. Can you talk about maybe a situation where there was something came up, you wanted to fix it, and either what happened in that situation and what got in the way?
I know. Listen, I have a 25-year chest of stories to pull from on these things. The stuff around the VP people, it's more recent. It's also a little bit more sort of sensitive. And frankly, it can be a little, I don't know, like it's sort of venturing into some people's private stuff. So like product stuff comes to mind. So I can talk about that. I was part of this wonderful organization for about 12 years. And I think you'll appreciate this because it's just so ridiculous. So we were deploying a product that allowed you to donate online, right? And you could also purchase tickets if you needed it. Now, I just want to set it for one time. It was hard to build software back then. It wasn't in the cloud. And if it was, it was very expensive. So there was a lot of stuff that like today you were like, I can't believe, but like, this is a true story. So we were working with a particular charity, and that charity had a big radio-a-thon. And so just to be clear, they would use our platform and we'd have no idea what they were doing, right? Thousands of charities across the world were using this particular platform to spin up these things to sell or to donate. And so we were processing the money in the background and providing the forum to sell the tickets. And so they were selling tickets to the Kingston Penitentiary. Yeah. And so big radiothon, and it was to get access into the penitentiary to get like these exclusive tickets to do a tour.
Wow.
Yeah. So what happened was they had created like this infinite loop between their system and our system. And when that happened back in the day, it would shut down your entire instance. And for us, that was North America. So we had to disable what had happened there. And in the background as a product manager, I quickly came up with plan B, plan C, right? Of selling limited edition tickets into this. Should we relaunch plan A and it not work? We'll go to plan B. Should plan B not work, we'll go to plan C. But to be clear, of the 200 tickets in each one of the events, you know, I put 200 tickets in each one of them, and there were only a total of 200 tickets. So of course, plan A worked wonderful. They also released plan B and plan C. So that means 600 tickets were sold in a limited edition 200 tickets. And to just add a little context to the story, we were 48 hours into being acquired.
Oh my goodness.
So, like, hello, new CEO. Here's what's happened. We have messed up. Like, we have messed up. And again, like, it wasn't intentional that plan B and plan C went out. It was accidental that the charity put them out. But of course, in the moment, it's crazy. So we had to then call 400 people and tell them that they didn't have tickets to the Kingston Penitentiary. And I'll tell you, if somebody has bought tickets to get into a penitentiary, it's because a loved one has been there or something. And so it was devastating that we had done that. So much so that the charity asked us to take a full page ad out in the Kingston newspaper to apologize and asked that we send up our new CEO to Canada, who's American, to come and apologize in person.
No. Wow.
So that was me as the head of product 48 hours in. I've got so many like crazy war stories where like we disappointed the entire continent of England once. Like, there's just so many things that you just have to sit there and shake your head and be like, I cannot believe this is what is happening right now. But yeah, the Kingston Penitentiary one where we triple sold all of those tickets. Wow. And then had to call those poor people. And you just have to take a breath and be like, you know, you can sit beside the desk, especially as a product person, and your users are often theoretical. Like a good product person goes out and has conversations with the users, but you are blind to them, right? You don't really see them. There's data and stuff, but they're not people, right? So when you have to call them and do these things, it is a huge empathy builder. Huge empathy builder. I think that's one of the interesting things as I translate it into people, because I very much have a product mindset and building for the people team, allowing us to be product managers. We're just at the cusp of that in the company I'm in now, to reorganize ourselves to get into that mindset. But the delta there is I see my end users every day because I work with them. And that is such an interesting lens to think about when you're designing programs, when you're designing features, when you're doing all these types of things. I have to have coffee with the end users, and there's positives and negatives to that. But I believe like doing all that work in product allowed me to be a systems thinker and being able to translate and bring that into the people function. It's a little more slow going than I wanted in terms of like really like making that translation about being a product mindset into the people. But I'm ready now. I'm really ready.
Cara, if you've been in business long enough, you are going to run into situations where things go wrong. I know I've had it as well. And I've always said, as long as I can learn something out of it and move in a positive direction for the next time, then that's okay. What, and it doesn't have to be that specific example, but is there a learning that you've taken from times where, hey, I've hit a roadblock, uh-oh, shit's hit the fan. What's been that biggest learning for you in developing in your career?
My mind goes to something that was frankly foundational to who I am, which is my dad. So I spent my entire 20s caring for my dad, who in his early 50s got a really, really rare neurodegenerative disease called progressive supranuclear palsy. No one has ever heard of it. It comes off like you're deeply drunk with Parkinson's. Like it's the most bizarre, terrible, terrible disease. But I spent my 20s, instead of traveling and career exploring and doing all the things that you need to do as you blossom into life, caring for somebody who wouldn't have wanted me to give up anything in life, right? But like rallied with my sister and my mom, incredible women, and my then boyfriend, now husband, right? Who spent our 20s, our vacation time was with my dad. He was in bed. He was nonverbal, non-communicative for the last 5 years of his disease. So there was so much that we had to creatively problem solve because there were no medications. There was nothing we could do. We just had symptom after symptom that we had to try to problem solve ourselves. So to give an example, he was walking pretty well, but couldn't swallow or eat. So he was walking with a feeding tube. And that's some really creative problem solving. So I often talk about that time in my life. And by the way, he's English. So like we laughed our way through the ridiculousness of it, right? Like he would start brushing his teeth and he couldn't stop. And so that was part of the disease. Or he'd turn a light on, off. Or our absolute favorite is he would call the dog in by tapping a biscuit on the door. And then he would just be tapping and he couldn't stop tapping. And the biscuit is disintegrating and he's laughing and the dog is salivating outside. Right? So, but the point of me bringing that up is like, I spent that decade first of all, in fear and love, in the two things were true at the same time, but it was constant problem solving. And I think that also bodes well for me in terms of startups, right? Like it was the most, God willing, the most difficult thing I'll ever have to go through in my life. Did it with a community and just problem solve my way out of it. Work the problem, or do it together. So that is like my biggest sort of learning and how I get out is surround myself with community, believe in myself, and work the problem.
Thanks for sharing that. And one thing I will say, someone who I respect a lot that we had lunch with last summer, she had said, you know, I really enjoy the podcast, but I especially enjoy the podcast when I get to know the person behind the role. And the fact that you're comfortable enough with us to be vulnerable about sharing an experience, I just like you even more than I did, you know, since we first met.
Oh, so nice.
This is great. I appreciate that.
No problem. Yeah.
I'll pipe in. And again, you know, to echo what Robin just said, to share a story like that. And I think that going back to your sense of humor, I mean, I think that's probably what helped you get through some of that, because sometimes you just got to laugh, right?
You do. And it's like, I got a massive dose of perspective really early in my life. Right. And so as I go through and people are worried about things, I'm like, you know, it comes with age already, but I got that pretty early about just being a stabilizer around that. And even the communities of women that I've built ever since, we've got one that we've started up for HR that we call ourselves the Relaxed Women's Fight Club.
Love it.
There's a great saying around like, you meet all these successful women, but rarely do you meet a relaxed woman. And so we have a goal of being relaxed, like heads of HR, heads of people, but also we want to like get in there, get in the fight and sort of engage. So I think that's good. And the other group that I run is called the Golden Goals, which is like a play on the Golden Girls. Mm-hmm. And like, you just got to find that community. And by the way, Amanda was part of one of those groups for a while. Yeah, you just got to dig in and love it.
Kara, can we shift gears a little bit?
Sure.
I want to ask you about what your thoughts are around the up and coming generation, whether that be your kids, the kids of today, going into high school, going into university. What do you think is in store for that generation? Especially because you just framed some things around, you know, the challenges that the world has been through in the last few years with COVID and the political situation, not just in the States, but around the world, things that are going on that maybe we wouldn't even thought could be happening a few years ago. Give me your thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know what? I remember I'd proposed this as a potential thing. I was like, I'm going to do some deep thinking about it. And I'm like, sure, like I've got some stuff, but I'm just as like in the curiosity point of this. So a bit of context, I have a 16-year, 17-year-old, and we're starting to think about like, what do you take in school? What do you want to sort of grow into? We still very much are in this sort of like Victorian model of high school, right? Where everyone learns the same thing at the same time versus self-directed learning, where, you know, you go and explore your way, but then you land yourself in a startup and it is self-directed learning. That is the people that are successful, right? So at the end of the day, I very much believe I'm curious about like looking at courses and trying to figure it out. But actually what I really care about is whether or not my kids believe they can do hard things, right? I don't care what the subject matter is. I think all of it is should just follow curiosity and whatever the rules are around that particular thing, work that problem, figure it out. But it doesn't have to be this constant layering of bricks onto the next step. Like I did this, then this, then this. I think a jagged and atypical career path where people try hard things and stay incredibly curious, those are the people that I want to live with and that I want to raise, right? They want to solve hard things. And yeah, I'm just so curious about like the jobs of tomorrow versus the way that we're still educating our kids, the way the course selections go, even at universities, right? There's like a handful of universities in Ontario where you choose from 4 to 6 programs, let's say, and there's other ones where there's literally a catalog for first-year students that are over 100 different programs, not just courses, programs. And I'm like, what are we doing? We're not taking the next generation and kind of like readying them for the innovation sort of centers that we need. And so I'm just so curious to know how that all plays out, but I don't have a great answer yet. I'm more just on my path around this.
Well, we had a conversation just yesterday and someone used a great term, career detour. And it was basically accidental, right? You're going down a path, you think you got it all planned out, and all of a sudden, boom, you got to take a detour on your career. And sometimes it's those detours where you have to learn, you have to be curious, you have to be resilient. And suddenly you find out, hey, you know what? I really enjoy this. I think this is where I want to be. So that came to mind when you were talking about that.
That's right. I think, you know, if nothing, I've been consistent with choosing these environments to put myself in. Although I often say every startup, which is, you know, I'm usually in the 0 to 1, maybe 1 to, you know, a little bit above that sort of phase. I think even at the current place I'm in now, in one of my interviews, it just comes out so naturally to me because it's not like in a threatening way or anything for me, but I'm acknowledging like, hey, this might not be forever, right? I probably shouldn't be in tech startups forever and ever and ever. And so I'll often like play around with what should I sort of look for next, but I keep coming back without doubt. And when I go and look for the next thing, there's no question in my mind. I like to build. I like to look at the hard things. I like to build long-lasting relations with people that we can look back on and be proud of what we accomplished for whatever stage that we're together.
Kara, so the first time ever that we've recorded with someone on their birthday.
What?
So let's pretend for a second that Al and I could magically grant you a birthday wish. What would it be?
Oh, great question. I'm flipping between help me clean my house because I'm hosting 60 people. It's happy thing tonight.
Al's on his way.
That's like my immediate, like short-term answer. But, you know, the wish is, it's not going to be any different than anywhere else, which is like quality of life for as long as possible.
That is good.
Yeah, that is for sure. Learn that firsthand. Mm.
Well, we're going to keep it going in that vein because, as you know, Al has a signature question. It's a little more philosophical, and I'm always curious to see how people are going to answer it. So, Al, why don't you take it away?
Absolutely. Yeah, let's just hop into it. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Yes. Okay. I've alluded to them. So it's absolutely these goals groups that I started my first one. I said my inaugural group, it was a bunch of us women looking around. We'd all pretty much had like, we're done sort of bearing children. Some were working, some were artists, some were a group that just didn't know what they were doing next. And I looked around like, we got to do this together. Like I knew one of them well, but the other ones we just sort of gathered and there was such a need for us to get together and build community. So much so that we kind of like formalized the alchemy of the group. And it's a place where we hold space for each other. Specifically, women's relationships are often very complicated, but imagine that you have a space where we get together about 3-ish times a year, though we do stay in contact with each other. They're not my best friends. And I think that's really important. There's a bit of a distance so that you can say honest things. And we get together for 5 or 6 hours. It's important to break bread. We hold space for each other. And each woman gets 40 minutes to speak. And it just, everyone starts and says, I don't need the time. I don't need the whole time. I've got nothing big's going on, right? But what I find is, and this is through my whole career and everything, specifically with women, I can't speak to men or, you know, but women can solve their own problems. They just need the advocates sitting in their corner. So it's a bit of talk therapy, I guess, in a sense, but you are there to hold space for them. It is a sacred time. You're not there to interrupt or to solve their problems. I don't need that. I just need to be able to say things out loud into a group of people that can receive it. And like we've done everything that life can throw at you. We've talked about in these groups, we've had miscarriages, like all the things that happen, those big, big deaths of parents, big, heavy things that happen. And we are always there for each other. And it is not the same thing as like a girlfriend's, right? Like it is a group that we are there lifelong to support each other. And so when I think about like planting those seeds or planting those trees, I'm really hoping that's a thing that can blossom. So we've done that now. I'm starting to do it now with this group of what happened to be women, but it doesn't need to be in HR, this Relaxed Women's Fight Club. It's just like, these are the types of things that are invaluable relationships that I just think will solve so many problems. You just need to give people the space to figure stuff out themselves, come to their own conclusions. with a small army of people that are there with undying support, with no judgment, and that they can just take things to the next level. And so I'll loop it back to Amanda at the very end, since I keep calling her out. One of the things that she always wanted to do, we started writing down and thinking about 4 or 5 years ago, is coming true, which is she is doing a big life adventure. I won't spoil it because she might not want to, but there's a big life adventure coming up for her right now. And that is something that we planted that seed before. We still talk about it. We hold each other's goals. We hold each other's secret wants, our secret desires in our hearts for each other, and nothing but joy once they come back out. Yeah. So lots of amazing stuff have come out of those groups. And I hope that I'll always have something like that in my life. And I hope that other people can model it in some way. It's incredible.
Well, you set the stage for a lot of other people to follow in your footsteps with that answer. And I think you probably will get some people thinking about how they can do that with their group of friends and supporters. So thanks for that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. If anyone ever wants to talk about it, there's a specific formula and an alchemy to the group. And like, it's actually important that it isn't your best friends, that there's a bit of distance, because if you bare your soul in a thing, you don't necessarily want to see them the next day. Right? You want a bit of space, and that's the healthy part of it. So yeah, happy to chat with anyone about that. We've done a few pilots to use the product manager language and have been incredibly successful.
Well, this has been amazing. Again, a first for us recording a birthday podcast. So I'm hoping this is something
do it more often.
That you'll look back on fondly on your birthday.
Thanks.
I want to say thank you so much for joining us and thank you for sharing your journey. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at Rose Rocket?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the best way. It's the easiest, publicly available.
Okay, well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or join in the conversation on LinkedIn. And remember, success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.